We invest in our health and we invest in our families. Should we invest in investments? Get ready for some practical lessons from the world's all-time best-selling book, The Holy Bible. Hello again, and welcome back to part five of a seven-part series called God, Satan, Money, and You. We've been dealing with a lot of big issues, and this is a big program. This is number five, and our title is called Should Christians Invest at All? I'm here with my good friend Paul Selko.
And be back.
Paul, you and I have done a lot of study and discussing on these topics, and so let's just dive in. I guess the first question I want to deal with is a lot of people ask themselves, should Christians even think about their future, investing, retirement, things like that, for the simple reason that we're in the last days, and Jesus is coming, and these are the end times. So should that even be on our radar? What do you think?
Well, that's a good question, Steve, and I think there's definitely some Bible principles we could look at to answer those questions.
Yes, there are more than many people realize. And let's start with Luke chapter 19. Okay. And verse 11, just really right out of the gate, to me, this is pretty significant, very significant. Luke 19, 11 says, as they heard these things, he, referring to Jesus, added and spoke a parable because he was near to Jerusalem and because they thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. Hmm. Now, we certainly want the Lord to appear as quickly as possible.
Yes, absolutely.
But we also have to learn to be patient and to deal with the time period between now and his coming.
That's right.
And so, Jesus, that's the context. People thought it was about to happen, so why do anything? And then verse 12, Jesus said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So, to me, this is a mega point that the parable Jesus shows the person went to a far country. The nobleman obviously is Jesus, and he's gone all the way to heaven. And then it says he called his 10 servants in verse 13 and delivered to them 10 pounds and said to them, and what did he say?
Occupy until I come.
Yes, occupy until I come. So we believe he's coming, but what do we do in the meantime?
We occupy. And this word occupy, in my Bible, there's a little footnote that says, do business.
Yeah, it's the same in my Bible, do business. So so there's a balance here between waiting for his coming, and he commanded us to do business and to occupy until he comes.
That's right.
So that's a perfect blend of balance. So anyway, when you keep reading the parable, finally he comes back. And in verse 15, he called them to whom he had given the money that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. So he wanted the people, his servants, to use their money, their talents, their abilities, and multiply them. And then in verse 16, then he came to the first, and the first one said, Lord, your pound has gained 10 pounds. And he said to him, well done. So what do you think about that? 1 pound becoming 10 pounds.
That is well done, I would say, in a financial world. That's about 1,000% return on his money right there.
Yes, that's a lot of money. And it wasn't a get rich quick from 1 to 10. Because remember, he went into a far country. And so it was after a long time that his one talent became 10 talents.
Right.
But again, that's a big return. And the Lord was very pleased with that. He commended him. And then in verse 18, the second one came and said, Lord, your pound has gained 5 pounds. That's a 500% return, right. And then the third person, he hid his money, his Lord's money, under a napkin. Verse 21 says he was afraid, afraid of God and afraid to do something with that money. Mm-hmm. So he buried it, or he put it in a napkin, and he hid it. And then verse 23, the Lord, or the nobleman, says to this man, Wherefore then gave you not my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required or received my own with interest?
Yep.
So it seems to me that in this parable, Jesus is speaking like a businessman, and he gave his servants a certain amount of his goods, wanted them to increase those goods. When he came back, he was pleased with those that had done that.
So the expectation was for the servants to be wise with the money he entrusted them.
That's right,
them.
And
so.
To occupy while he, until he came.
That's right.
That's right. And so we have you know, business language here, and the Lord definitely wants people to multiply their talents, their abilities, their gifts in their service for him, mm-hmm. which in the context of the parable, the literal parable applies to money as well.
Okay.
Now let's go to the ant section. You and I really have
Proverbs
read this.
Proverbs 6:6, I think we're having,
yes.
right?
Yep. Proverbs 6:6. Why don't you read verses 6-8?
Okay. And this is a text many people are familiar with. It says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider its ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest."
Right, so this is Solomon writing. Solomon was one of the wisest men who ever lived. God gave him wisdom, and he's talking about a lesson from nature, the lesson from little itty-bitty tiny ants. And he says, look at the ant, go to the ant, you sluggard. I think some Bibles say, you lazy person. So he's talking about laziness.
And that's interesting, Steve, because at our house, we've got a couple of these big ant piles, and in the summertime, in the wintertime, you don't see them, but in the summertime, they're always busy. They're not laying around dormant. They're busy.
Yeah, they're not
busy,
sitting
busy.
Around on their phones,
that's right.
on their cell phones, watching
that's
TV.
That's right.
They are little busy, busy bodies, and significantly, well, Solomon tells us to look at the ants and to be wise, to learn a lesson from the ant. Okay. And then he says what the ants do is they provide their meat in the summer and they gather their food in the harvest.
That's
so
right.
If you think about what ants do during the summer months when they're fully productive, they are not just eating for their present needs, but they are gathering.
They're laying it up for the future.
That's right. They're laying it up for the future so that when the winter comes and they can't go out there and gather food, they've been preparing for their future in advance.
That's right.
And that's the principle. And as I've thought about our lifetime, it seems to me that we all have a spring time in our life where we're growing, we're young. Then we have a summer time in our life where we are, working hard, the most productive. Then we have a fall time in our life where we're starting to wind down, which...
And usually in the fall, you see the harvest, right? You see the fruit trees are growing. You see the harvest coming in.
Yeah, the harvest coming in. And for me, I think I'm just at my age. I think I'm kind of in the fall years. It's not the summer months for me as much. I don't have my full productivity, but I'm still active. But one of these days, I know the winter's going to come. And if time goes on long enough, if Jesus doesn't come, for a while. I don't know. I hope he'll come as soon as possible, but it's very possible that I'll get to the age where I'm 70 or 80 and in my winter months. And according to this text and this principle here, I need to be prepared for those days in advance,
right.
which to me sounds a lot like preparing for retirement.
It does look a lot like that.
It sure does. And then if you look at verses 9 to 11, Solomon's very pointed. He said, "How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of your sleep? Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep, so shall your poverty come on you as one that travels, and your want as an armed man." So he's essentially saying that if we don't do what the ants did, and if we don't prepare for our futures in advance, when those winter months come, later on in our life,
poverty sneaks up.
Yeah, poverty is going to come like a bandit, and it's going to attack us.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be stuck, you know, in our later years. And then, unfortunately, in that situation, you have to be dependent upon others.
That's right.
Rather than having prepared for your own needs, so you're not a burden on people.
Yeah. That's right.
And that's a big concern. Let me share a couple quotes that I've recently been really impressed with. I actually read this one this morning. This is Councils on Stewardship, page 250. This really just really spoke to my heart. It says here, after you have earned means, in other words, after you've made money, this particular person, she says, you have not studied to economize in reference to a time when means could not be earned so easily. Mm-hmm. In other words, you haven't been economizing and preparing for the time when you're not able to work as much. Mm-hmm. And then it says, listen to this, had you and your wife understood it to be a duty that God enjoined upon you to deny your taste and your desires and to make provision for the future. It's a duty. Mm-hmm. Like the ants, instead of living merely for the present, you could now have had a competency and your family would have had the comforts of life.
Oh, that's a powerful statement, Steve.
Yeah. And then it says, continuing, you have a lesson to learn which you should not be backward in learning. Mm-hmm. It is to make a little go the longest way. So the practical wisdom of the ants, I see it's right here, that you should be making provision for your future and not just living for the present.
And part of that process is educating ourselves from what I'm hearing from her.
Yes, and I think a lot of times we just think, well, I don't need to worry about that. I'm just going to trust in the Lord and He'll take care of all that. And it's true that God doesn't want us to panic or be stressful or full of anxiety, but He does want us to prepare. That's a wise, practical principle, which is in the Bible, and it's in Councils on Stewardship. And here's another one other little section in a book called Second Selected Messages. The section is called To a Young Man, Counsel to Economize and to Save. And it talks about how this young man should have had a little competency or something put aside untouched so that when should he become sick or should something happen in the future, that the charities of others would not be your dependence, that you're not dependent upon other people. And then it talks about you might now have something on interest and you might be getting some returns. And then even more specifically, she says that with your even with your limited wages, you might have taken some of those wages and it might have been invested in a lot of land, which would be increasing in value. Mm-hmm. So there is a time, of course, and we'll talk more about this. There are unwise investments. There's a foolish way to invest, mm-hmm. and there's a wise way, that you're preparing for yourself and you're looking to get a return on your income for the benefit of yourself and your family, and so you're not being a burden on others, and so that you can ultimately help people as well.
That's right.
These are biblical principles. So if we think about the whole issue of how do we prepare for our future, what do we do? Here's some recent statistics I read that over 50% of Americans do not have any retirement. And the three main reasons why they don't is, number one, they don't think they have enough money to put anything away. They have too many bills. And their third is they're working on their debts, trying to get out of debt. And then for those who do have retirement accounts or something put away for the future, the majority have their money in simple savings accounts. Some have them in their 401ks. And there's what I read at the time of this article, 14% had them in an account, a Roth IRA, which we know the benefits. There's no taxes on the gains.
When you withdraw it,
in the Roth, right. So it seems like as a whole, Americans are more focused on today and trying to get out of debt and paying their bills, and they're not thinking about the future.
Right.
But the Lord wants us to do that. So how do we do that? What's the best way to do it? We can put our money in the bank, which doesn't have very much interest. It's not a bad option, but with inflation going up faster than the interest rates that you're going to get in the bank.
It's a good idea to at least stay ahead of inflation.
That's possible. Right. If people could put money in a CD. That's another option. There are different options. And then having some kind of investment strategy that has to do with the market, that's another option. And I've done a lot of research on this topic, and I've learned that when it comes to the stock market and those kind of things, A lot of it is just like what the Book of Revelation calls Babylon. It's Babylonian, to draw, to use an analogy. But just like there's a lot of Babylonian confusion and wrong ways to do things, there's also, Revelation also talks about a remnant. And from my study, I've learned that there's a right way and there's a wrong way. Just like the wise virgins and the foolish virgins, there's a smart way versus a foolish way. And maybe we should talk a little bit about the difference between investing and gambling. Is there a difference?
That is a good question, Steve. We get asked that a lot. And there's a fundamental difference between investing and gambling. First, gambling, whether it be slot machines or lottery tickets or the blackjack table or whatever, in order for someone to win, someone else needs to lose. So if you're gaining at the expense of someone else, that should be considered dishonest gain by Christians, I think. Investing, however, is not that way. Investing done correctly should be a win-win strategy. For example, when you buy stocks, you're purchasing a small portion of a company.
Of a business.
And when you do that, either directly or indirectly, that business profits from that transaction. It helps strengthen their company. And so the company definitely can win from that, but how does the investor win? Well, there's a couple different ways the investor can win from investing. First, when you purchase these stocks, in return, the company pays you a portion of their revenue, and that's called a dividend. A second way is, as time goes on and the company continues to strengthen its position and grow and expand, well, the stock prices go up. So years later, if you're holding on to it and you're doing this wisely, the stock you hold in your portfolio should be worth more than the day you paid for it, right? And that's called capital appreciation. So there's a couple ways that the investor can gain. It's worth noting, Steve, that yes, it's possible to lose money in the stock market, but I think a long-term strategy can minimize those fluctuations. As you and I both have studied in the stock market, there are some fluctuations in the market. And also, Steve, as Christians, I think when we look at wise investment strategy, we really don't want to invest in a company that we would consider to not be ethical or moral.
Right, immoral.
Because, for example, I wouldn't want to purchase stock in a company that produced cigarettes or maybe an abortion pill or something.
Or alcohol.
Because I don't want that company to gain, and I don't want to profit from their gain. So I think we need to be wise about that.
That's right. I was listening to Alistair Huang, if I said his last name right. He's the executive director of Audioverse, which is a major source of spiritual truth that many people go to listen to sermons. And he was talking about this, and he said, when it comes to investing, there's no investment that's perfect because we're in a fallen world.
Yeah, but
we have to do the best that we can. And obviously, and as I've read this book, Counsels on Stewardship, there's a lot of counsel about avoiding speculation, trying to get rich quick, which is the temptation for people to just try to, you know, make 1,000% return on their money in a week. Whereas when you look at the parable of Luke 19, it's a long time. The principle is a long time. And here's another quote that I read in Counsels on Stewardship, page 231. It says here, "The old, safe, healthful paths of competence are losing their popularity. The idea of accumulating substantial means," and she's not negative against this, she says, "the idea of accumulating substantial means by the moderate gains of industry and frugality is an idea that is scorned by many as no longer suited to this progressive age." So in other words, the basic idea of working hard, saving, thinking about your future and doing it in a wise way, this can still accumulate substantial means. But we don't do it in a get-rich-quick way. We do it in a wise way that makes a lot of sense. I've got something I'd like to share with everybody here. This is a page I received in the mail. It's basically about the Adventist retirement plan. Many church members are not aware of the fact that, at least in North America, the vast majority of full-time pastors and also full-time conference employees that work at the conference office, they are enrolled in a plan for their future. It's the retirement plan. It says here, this is the Adventist Retirement Plan from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in the North American Division. And it's managed by a company called Empower. And this is a sample of what happens when the pastors get their paychecks and the employees get their paychecks. They take a little percentage of their paycheck and they put it into the Empower plan, which is a diversified group of quality investments. And let's say they decide to put 3% in out of every paycheck, then they have what's called an employer match. So the conference matches that with another 3%, which is a great plan. We've talked about that's 100% return on your money.
Yeah, that is the best plan if your employer has a matching
yes,
plan.
Yes, and so then they take 3% and they match it with 3%. And here's a list. There's seven different asset allocations or categories of different funds that are made up of individual businesses that they are investing in every time they get a paycheck. And here's the SDA Large Cap Equity Index Fund, which are the big cap or the big companies in America. Then there's a small to mid cap equity index fund. There's the International Equity Index Fund. There's an emerging market fund. There's a couple of bond funds. And the principle is that when employees of the church get their salaries, they have a plan, like the ant. And I think it's a wise plan, I really do, that they take a little bit, the conference matches it, and they put it into a well-diversified, balanced group of funds and assets. And if you do this with a long-term perspective in mind, it's very, very good. Here are quickly ways to lower risk when you get into this type of investing. Number one, you do your homework, so you know what you're investing in. Number two, you're avoiding a get-rich-quick mentality. Number three, you're diversifying, and you are investing in quality businesses and funds. You are thinking long-term. You automate your monthly contributions, which is what happens when the salaries automatically get matched and they go into a fund, so you don't even have to think about it. You can get on with your life. You can focus
on
your family and God's work and helping other people, and you do it with small amounts. So little bits add up as time goes on, and that is a very smart way to practice the wisdom of ants and to grow your funds for your future. And as you know, I've developed a whole course on this called Grow Your Money with God, and that's what this is all about. It's about being smart, being wise, and thinking about the future under God's guidance and doing things in a right way.
That's right, Steve. There's a couple of Bible principles I want us to look at before we run out of time today.
Sure.
One is based on Luke chapter 12, 16 through 21. Now, we don't have time to read the story, but if you recall, in this parable, this foolish man hoarded all this money, and then his life came to an end, and the Lord said, well, where will this money go? You're a fool, he calls him. So it's worth noting that this man was hoarding for himself. He didn't even have a beneficiary, and he didn't have a giving plan. So I think it's important, Steve, when we focus on long-term wealth or long-term growth, we need to have a giving plan. We need to keep the kingdom of God first in our mind, right?
That's right. That's our primary investment, is giving to God's work. And so we're not just accumulating for ourselves only. It's for our family's needs, so we're not being a burden on others. And ultimately, it's so that we can have more to give to the work of Jesus Christ in this world.
Absolutely. Another principle is based on Proverbs 28:20 and Proverbs 13:11. And I like how Proverbs 13:11 reads, "Dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little, it will grow." And you had touched on this. It's not about get rich quick.
That's right.
The Bible says the fool is hasty to get rich. It takes a long-term, careful strategy,
That's
careful
right.
planning.
Little by little. So. And with the Adventist retirement plan and with a wise plan of investing, if you're putting a little bit in every month, it's called dollar cost averaging, that if the market goes up, you're doing good. If it goes down, you keep on doing it every month, and you're getting a discount. And so thinking long-term, it's gonna help to grow your funds for your needs and to help others.
That's right. Another one is 1 Corinthians 10:31. It basically, whatever you do, do the glory of God. We just have to keep in mind, we've been touching a lot on this in this series, that we're stewards. We're managers of this money.
That's right.
And as we do our due diligence in accumulating this wealth, remember it belongs to God. And,
that's right.
And do that to the glory of God.
That's
and
right.
We can do it to the
that's
glory
right. And
of God.
Whether we have a little, like the widow's two mites, or whether we have a lot, God appreciates every unselfish attempt to give to His work. That's what He wants us to do, little by little. Here's a couple of interesting quotes. John Bogle, who wrote, this is a fabulous book, definitely recommend it. It's called The Little Book of Common Sense Investing by John Bogle, who founded Vanguard. The principles in this book are phenomenal. And he made this classic statement. He said, if you put nothing away for retirement, I can tell you to the last penny how much you will have when you retire. And how much is that? It's nothing.
Nothing.
That's right. And Warren Buffett also said, the trick in investing is buying good businesses and owning them for a long time. Mm. So there's principles that we need to learn in Ecclesiastes 10, verse 10. Solomon talks about if a person has a dull axe, he needs more strength. But if the axe is sharp, he can cut the wood quickly, and it says wisdom will give success.
That's right.
And wisdom is not just dealing with heavenly things, but it's also dealing with earthly things, practical things, getting out of debt, handling our money, thinking about retirement. And again, the biggest concern of the Lord is our hearts, is that we have a heart for Him. We're not doing this for selfish reasons. We want to benefit others, and we want to meet our needs, and we want to help advance the Lord's work. That's really the bottom line. And so we hope this has been a valuable discussion for you. Paul said, let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. We all have to make our own decisions under God, what He wants us to do. But we do know that the Lord is coming, that He is coming. And we also know that He told us to occupy until He comes. So may God give us wisdom in how to do that under His blessing.
We hope you enjoyed this video. Before you go, check out these wonderful books for sharing. The Truth About the Sabbath is packed with information for anyone wanting to understand the Sabbath subject. Also, the 666 Beast Identified. What it means to you identifies both the beast and his strange number 666. What do the beast and his number have to do with you? Both are available in paperback and ebook versions from White Horse Media.
We hope you've been blessed by this White Horse Media production. To support White Horse Media, please call us at 1-800-78-BIBLE. That's 1-800-782-4253. You may also send your donations by mail to White Horse Media, P.O. Box 130, Priest River, Idaho 83856, or donate online at whitehorsemedia.com.
And now for some breaking news. White Horse Media has just launched its new free online Bible school, Thunder in the Holy Land, filmed in Israel to help you and others discover the true teachings of God's Word. To learn more, visit whitehorsemediabibleschool.com. You'll be glad you did.